From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going out into space with Robert Zimmerman. But here's what's happening. Tragic story in Iran. A Boeing 737-800, not the MAX, but an 800 passenger plane operated by a Ukrainian airline, crashed minutes after takeoff from Iran's international airport, killing all on board, apparently. There were conflicting reports about the number of people on board. Ukraine's foreign ministry says that there were more than 160 people on board. Iran talks about 180. Very tragic. The 737-800 is a type of Boeing 737 plane that came before the 737 MAX. Tom and I fly a 737-800 quite often. It's a beautiful plane. They are saying mechanical problems could have taken down that plane. Say a prayer for all those people. Iran has fired as many as 15 ballistic missiles into Iraq, targeting U.S. military and coalition forces early Wednesday, in a major retaliation by the rogue regime after the U.S. airstrike that killed the Iranian Quds Force General Qassem Soleimani last week. 10 missiles hit the airbase, one missile hit a military base in Erbil, and four missiles failed to hit their targets. Initial assessments showed no U.S. casualties, according to U.S. military officials. No word yet on whether we will respond. At least 50 people were killed in a stampede as tens of thousands of mourners packed streets for the funeral of the slain Iranian military commander in his hometown, forcing his burial to be delayed by several hours today. A cybersecurity expert, Justin Kapos, warns that Iran has already proven it's both adept at launching cyber attacks and that those attacks can cause real damage in the wake of the death of this general. Let's check in with our expert on such matters, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, is this exaggerated or is this serious?
It's kind of hard to know. And in fact, the U.S. CERT sent out a bulletin that I received within the last 24 hours that addresses exactly this, but when you actually read it, it's very long, and when you actually read it, it's mostly generic suggestions of things that organizations should be doing anyway. So while it lists a number of attacks, previous attacks, that are believed to have been associated with Iran, but most of them not actually proven, because as we've discussed many times, it can be very hard to pin down the actual sources of these kinds of attacks. It doesn't really provide a lot of new information. So it says things like, you should have heightened awareness. Well, yeah, that's a good thing to have.
But what can you do about that, right?
Yeah, right. And you should have increased organizational vigilance. These are all things from the actual, the actual bulletin they sent out. You should have incident response plans. You should have good backups. These are all things that absolutely make sense. But, of course, you would want to be doing the same thing if you were trying to protect yourself from Iran or China or Russia or North Korea or someone trying to do malware for ransom that has nothing to do with any other country. These are all basic things. So I think the bottom line that we're looking at here is, yes, we know that Iran has sophisticated cyber attack capabilities, and they are becoming more sophisticated as time goes by. Whether or not they will choose to exercise those and in what way, at this point, we don't know. And I think a lot is going to depend on what the sequence of events is that we see happening in the broader situation here. Is this going to be escalating onward and upward, or is it going to tamp down in some way? And again, we also have to keep in mind, if there are cyber attacks, there are cyber attacks every day. And so we should not jump to the conclusion that Iran is behind any given cyber attack. Even when you see, for example, a site that's defaced and says this is Iran defacing this site, it may be, or
it may be an imposter.
It may be a false flag imposter that's putting together a site to make it look like it was done by Iran. So we always have to be very careful in the forensic analysis of these things. And really, the bigger question is, what's going to happen? Are we going to war? Or are we going to find a way to avoid a catastrophe here.
Well, let's hope after today's volley of missiles, and nobody heard apparently that Iran stops and we don't have to retaliate for this and we just let it go.
Sure hope so.
Me too, Lauren. We'll talk to you soon, maybe even this week again. Well, folks, let's take a look at a multi-agency task force that's been set up to investigate mysterious reported drone sightings across remote parts of northeast Colorado and southwest Nebraska. Following a meeting of more than 70 local, state, federal, and military officials in Colorado, people are concerned about what the heck is going on with these drones that are flying all over the place. Reports of mystery drone sightings began about 2 weeks ago, and they have been tapering off for the last few days, but who knows what's going on. A 13-year-old girl in China is facing possible amputation of multiple fingers after she was forced to shovel snow for hours in frigid temperatures by her school. The poor little girl who shoveled for hours without any gloves now has swollen and blackened fingers due to frostbite. Well, as we reported yesterday in a new paper published in the Journal of Behavioral and Experimental Economics, a trio of British economists applied some brain power to the question of gut feelings and intuition and found that people who second-guess themselves make considerably worse decisions. Let's check in with resident psychiatrist Dr. Peter Bregan. So I guess we go with our first instinct and stick with it, Peter. What do you say?
Well, I think a lot of times it is. You know, we call it gut feelings, but we also talk about, you know, following our heart. I think if we're in a good place, especially if we're feeling peaceful, we're feeling alert, we're feeling aware, we're feeling in touch, then that gut feeling can represent something that's very basic to us. You know, that's from our experiences, from our values, and it can often be, just a very good thing to follow. But we've been given reason for a reason, and we always need, I think, if things are important, to also look at them from reason and rationality. But I put a lot of value on original feelings, on love at first sight, I think is often very, very real. And I also want to suggest to people that, that being open to these kinds of feelings doesn't really put you at a lot of risk. People think if they're being open, they're being positive, they're being trusting to their feelings, they're in trouble. But actually, in my experience, the more open and loving you are, the more you get jangled by people who are hostile or angry or people you need to be suspicious of. So, I mean, you can be optimistic and trust your gut feelings, your heart feelings. But also keep in mind that we gotta be gotta check things out with reason over time.
But overall, stick with your first feeling, huh?
Oh, definitely. Give it a lot of credit and see where it takes you. But it's awfully important to be looking at the other side. You know, the things that get in the way, and in particular, George, are things like guilt and shame and anxiety. Often we respond. We might respond to somebody we could really love. We feel ashamed. We think they won't love us, or we feel guilty of wanting to be loved. Or we might think that we could get a really good job, and it's a gut feeling we love that job. And then we can be struck down with these negative emotions. So I write about that in my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. So be aware that you may be getting negative things that you think are gut feelings when they're from being abused or being manipulated.
All right. Thank you, Peter. Peter's website, Breggin.com, Breggin.com, his last name. Up next, a book written by Dr. Dana Cohen and Gina Bria, Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. We'll check in with Gina next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest for the next couple hours, Gina Bria. Gina is an anthropologist and founder of the Hydration Foundation. Now, that's recognized as a leading resource for hydration science and education. She's been named a Real World Scholar and co-author with Dana Cohen, the MD of Quench, your five-day plan to optimal hydration and 50 hydrating recipes. Quench has been recommended by the New York Times, Oprah's O Magazine, NPR, and many other media sources who recognize how Gina is helping to change our understanding of hydration for the better. What's an anthropologist doing writing about hydration, Gina?
Oh, I'm so very pleased to be here and very excited to share why an anthropologist would be looking at hydration of all things. And for me, that journey started because I was studying desert people, desert dwellers in different parts of the globe, looking at different conditions they were living in. And I kept asking the really simple question, don't laugh, but why aren't they dead without 8 glasses of water a day? I mean, come on, right?
I was going to ask you, if you go 3 days without water, are you going to die?
Well, you'll be dried out. We don't know the point of death for each person because everybody's a different ecology inside of themselves. But what I discovered in my research looking at communities that do deal with drought and do have to go 3 days without water is that our understanding of how water works in the body and how much we need was really quite different than the typical medical advising and prescription of 8 glasses a day for everybody. So I became, you know, convinced that this is something serious to really look into, especially in the kind of water-challenged world we're living in today and the health issues that so many people face and how much of that chronic conditions can be traced back to a lack of hydration in the cells.
And we're going to talk about hydration tonight with you, Gina. But, you know, when they talk about 8 glasses a day, does it have to be water? Could it be juice? Could it be Coca-Cola? Could it be anything?
Oh, yeah. There's some new studies out actually showing, George, that if you even have a little bit of fat in that water, for example, milk or skim milk, can empty out of the stomach more slowly and keep you hydrated over a longer period of time. And that's what I discovered in my research in different desert communities. They were not using just water. They were using a lot of fruits and vegetables, which do take longer to empty out of the stomach, but do bring a lot of hydration in. So it turns out that materials in the stomach or that come in with food are a really important part of this story. And if you eat a lot of beautiful foods with a lot of fresh, a lot of liquids in them, that those liquids are going to drain out of you at a much slower rate than if you were just pouring. And I know this might surprise some of your listeners, but pouring all that water through your system is not a good hydrating strategy. You can actually flash flood your system in as little as 10 minutes, and you are wiping out the very electrolytes and minerals that make water do the work in our body that we so desperately need.
Gina, haven't some people died by drinking too much water?
Oh, yes. It is a concern. And my co-author, Dr. Dana Cohen, is an integrative physician. She's an MD in New York City, and one of her findings was that people were coming to her who drank a great deal and were retaining a lot of sodium. She could actually tell that they were over-drinking and pulling out balancing minerals in through her blood work. So she would look them right in the eye and say, how much water you're really pouring through there, because your blood results show me that you are overhydrating.
What are some of the symptoms of dehydration?
Oh, yeah. Well, that is a very good question for me because I like to do it really short and dirty. It's fatigue. It's lack of focus. Those are the two big moments. And they catch you. You catch that awareness way before you get to the point where you're feeling thirst or you have headaches. You can really tell if you're just really low on the totem pole, you're irritable. I like to say crabbiness is a clear sign of dehydration.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Sure, your mood goes down. Your cogs, 2%, George, a 2% loss of hydration leads to measurable cognitive loss.
Now, tell me, though, how can we tell if we're dehydrated? Because obviously most of us don't know what 2% a loss is.
Sure. So what? That, yeah, by 3 o'clock you have afternoon fatigue. That's a really important sign that your system as a whole is not getting enough of that hydration.
Okay, so let's say from the morning to that afternoon, mm-hmm. where you're beginning to feel that dehydration feeling.
Yeah.
How many glasses of water might you have had, if any, to feel that way?
Well,
one or two, or just?
Yeah, here's where the problem is, George. People can drink a lot, but if they're not absorbing it,
they're still dehydrated.
They're still dehydrated, and that's the big message of our book, is that the absorption of hydration, this is a natural benefit of a living creature, whether you're a plant or a soil or an animal. You should be absorbing your water. And so the question is, why aren't we absorbing all this drinking we're doing? I think that's one of those questions you get to ask yourself, and there's some really surprising answers there. So the first one I would give is that absorption issue is the kind of diet that we are eating means that a vast amount of the water we're drinking doesn't really get into our system.
Interesting. All right.
Get into our tissues and our cells.
What foods, Gina, would you recommend to allow the absorption to take place?
Well, foods like fruits and vegetables that come with their own natural content of water, plus the fiber to function as a sponge in your system. But then, of course, we eat a lot of very dehydrating foods. So all we're trying to do in this book with Quench is just alert people, hey, if you're going to have a piece of pizza, have a salad with it, eat an apple, get some fresh a side of beautiful green beans.
All right, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Bananas good for you?
They're not high on the hydrating list. better for you to have an orange, really, or an apple.
Okay, all right. But you got to kind of balance it then with that and your liquids.
Yeah, think about it in a more of a compensatory way, so that you know you're going to go into a party, you're going to have alcohol. Load up before you go to the party and have a nice big glass. Or when you come home, you've had a little bit too much to drink, you're going to want to have a glass of water. But I do want to add a special trick so that you really get this idea that I hope we'll have a chance to talk about, which is tap water and your typical, bottled water that comes in a plastic bottle. That water has been interfered with by human efforts. It's not in its natural state anymore. So when we pressurize water through pipes or we chemically wash it in order for it to be sterile enough to be delivered through a tap, we're actually changing the molecular structure of the water.
Sure, but most of us don't have the luxury of going to the spring and taking a couple buckets of water with us.
Right, so I'm going to give you some tricks.
All right, give us a
trick.
They're
great. They're so simple, and they really do help. And what they do is put a kind of energy or charge back in the water that gets diminished by the way we treat or force or pressurize the water molecule. So here's my tricks.
All right. First
one is really simple. It's going to surprise you because it's adding salt back into water.
How much?
A pinch of sea salt. So you don't want to make the water taste salty. In fact, I had someone come back to me after reading our book and saying she must have not read it very carefully because she was putting like a teaspoon of salt in every glass of water.
That's too much. So maybe a quarter teaspoon or less?
Yes, less than a quarter teaspoon, more like an eighth or just a generous pinch. You want to go for sea salt. You want to go for rock salt, mineral salts, any of the salts that are not processed. So,
okay, all right. Are there salts in your little plastic bottle waters?
No, so you want to keep a little salt with you, or if you're at a restaurant, you can even ask for some salt. Don't use the table processed salt. If they have, if they're serving drinks at the bar, they can give you some of the the salts that go around the rim of the drink, even a lot of those places use fancy sea salts. So that's just one strategy.
All right, Steve, hold on. We're going to take a break, but we'll come back and look at some of these other strategies. That's fascinating. I never knew that. We'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gina Brio with us, her book, Quench, website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Gina, if you have like five glasses of water a day, should you put in five little pinches of salt in each one?
Absolutely, and I'm glad to complete this conversation because some of your listeners may be on a low-sodium diet, and that could seem rather strange to be adding sodium to water. So I want to give them some tricks, too, but not before I say, you know, when they take you to the hospital because you're super dehydrated, what do? They give you an IV bag with saline. So what we're doing with adding a tiny bit of pinch of salt to water basically is creating a very diluted form of saline, which is far more hydrating than just tap or bottled water without without this extra materials that come in and create energy in the water again.
Okay, and what was the other technique you wanted to recommend?
So, you know, a squeeze of lemon is a classic old technique. It comes from many traditions, and it turns out that when you squeeze that lemon juice into the water, you are also starting this energizing quality that we're trying to get back to.
Interesting.
Actually nature's way. You can use apple cider vinegar, a capful, and toss it in. That's actually a great thing to do before you go out drinking because that apple cider vinegar will eat up the sugars in the drink and the alcohol before it raises your insulin levels. So these old, you know, I'm an anthropologist. I've looked at indigenous traditions and old wives' approaches as, you know, taken them seriously and looked at what are the medical results from these, from the a lot of old ideas. Water plus something is what energizes water. So I want to nail for your listeners, they don't want to be drinking just a glass of water anymore. They always want to do something to it. Either add a pinch of salt, a squeeze of lemon, a tea bag even has natural materials, herbs, and flowers in it that will help change that water and give it energy back.
I'm going to take your advice on that. Now, in terms of the lemon, how much of the lemon do you put in there? And can you use the condensed lemon juice that comes in the green bottles?
Yes, you can. Look, we just want to start and get it going. And it just is one of those slices of lemon. So, again, if you're somewhere out at a restaurant and they hand you that, you know, ever not empty water, they're always giving you a big glass of water at restaurants. Just squeeze a lemon in there, squeeze a lime in there. If you have some salt, you can put a, each one of those things add a bit more energy to the water, which allows it now to pass into past your cell membrane and actually get in to your cells.
Well, and then will you feel a difference?
You will feel a difference. And another great benefit is you won't have to drink as much. So all that peeing comes down. That's really valuable for people who, you know, have to drive a truck all day, or they're the elderly and they're concerned about being incontinent and they don't drink, which is very bad for their brain because they're worried about peeing. In that case, I would recommend something like coconut milk pudding, you know, foods that carry hydration but also carry absorptive power so that you don't need as much liquid, but you still get a great hydration.
Tell us the story, Gina, about your mother.
Oh, this is very precious to me. I was studying, as I mentioned, different cultures, desert cultures, learning how desert dwellers cope with drought. While I'm taking those research data in, I'm going through old ethnographies, I'm visiting different sites, I keep getting messages that my mother in a nursing home is suffering from chronic dehydration of all things. And she kept being shipped back and forth between hospitals, and I was just beside myself. You know, I just had to solve this somehow. It was like, I can't let her. Here I am learning how all these other cultures deal with literally drought. And I'm going to say it, but my mother's nursing home, our offices, our schools, they are basically at drought conditions now. The way we live under fluorescent lights with high computer use, immobility, high prescriptions, processed foods, drywall, for heaven's sakes, George. I mean, we live in desert environments, truly, inside our houses and
mm-hmm.
our offices,
sure.
our schools, our nursing homes. So for me, this became really a very passionate pursuit to try to bring new strategies into the very compromised environments we're living in. We're basically all dehydrated. And with my mom, I discovered a very simple, I was, you know, like, how am I going to help her? I can't get her to drink anymore. You know, the staff who's helping her at the nursing home, you know, they just go about their business, and they don't have any real strategies for hydration that aren't just asking their residents to drink more, which many of them refuse for lots of different reasons, some of which I've already given. And what I decided to do was use a seed from the Mexican Tarahumara tribe called chia seed. It's a desert sage.
The C-H-I-H seeds.
Yes.
Yeah, I see those in stores all over the place.
They have become very widespread. And with
I always pronounce it chaya, but it's chia?
Well, just pronounce it however you want. Just please get some in your life.
All right.
They are one of the most highly high gel releasing plants. And to back up a little bit, in my research, I discovered that desert people use gel-like plants. And, of course, I want you to think of cactus and aloe because that gel in there, that gel-like quality, is really nature's concentrated water.
How do you ingest the chia seeds?
So you can... I sent my mom a package, and I asked the nursing staff to literally just mix a teaspoon in her orange juice in the morning. I knew she would drink her orange juice, and I knew that those chia seeds would begin to open up and release a gel, like an aloe gel, and that would extend her hydration through the afternoon until we could get her another serving of some kind of
interesting.
Hydrating. That recovered my mother. She never had another dehydrating incident.
That's an amazing story. So when people, you know, are going through their day, and like you said, they feel tired, fatigued, a little sluggish, what are the odds that it's dehydration as opposed to malnutrition or some other stupid thing?
Okay, I'm glad you asked because the cells, our bodies, and our brain are high water content entities, you know, there's vessels filled with water. So it is more likely to be dehydration than it is any of those other things. Those are way down the line. Malnutrition comes from being dehydrated. You don't have enough water in your system to take apart the very nutrients that are coming in. So even something like prescription medication, we now know that it isn't two aspirin and a glass of water. It's two glasses of water and two aspirins because we don't have enough water in our system to take apart our medications or to dismember the chemical content, material content of our food. And all of these are having impact, but the upstream solution is getting not more hydration, but better hydration.
What percent of people do you think are dehydrated, walking around and they don't even know it?
Well, I am a fan of Dr. Zach Bush. He's a triple board certified physician, a brilliant young physician who's really wowed the medical world. His specialty is hydration, and he says 100% of the people who come to see me are dehydrated. Now, I'm not surprised by that because I'm an anthropologist looking at the environments that we live in. And I know that modern environments, whether it's driving in commutes with cars or trains or riding the airplanes or going back into those offices where it's these are very dehydrating environments. Then we add on top of that now, George, we're using, and this is why I think we're even more dehydrated than we were, say, 5 years ago or 7 years ago with the advent of the cell phone.
Really? How come?
High computer use. Your cell phone is dehydrating you.
How so?
Well, that phone is bringing frequencies into our cells, and water is the most sensitive of all the receptors in our body. You're changing the frequency. You're reorganizing the water molecule. And so it's a big problem. Plus, you know, phones are hot. Computers are hot. And then another, so that's two places that they affect us. The third place is when we're on the phone, we tend to lean forward, and our whole spinal canal, our synovial fluid going down our spinal canal, is constricted just like a garden hose. In fact, when we sit, and we are so immobile in this society that our whole canal systems, our whole inner irrigations are kinked and not flowing freely as they would if we were standing more often or walking or moving around more often.
We had a doctor on the program a million years ago. I called him Dr. Batman.
Yes. I revere him.
He wrote a book about this.
Your body's many cries for water. Yes, it's a brilliant text. He was really the preeminent pioneer showing that water is the upstream solution. When he had no other medications to offer his fellow prisoners, he was unfortunately a victim of the Iranian Revolution. He was ordered to be the physician to the prisoners, yet he had no recourse to any kind of medications. The only thing they had was a water fountain.
Oh, jeez.
And he was really able to document how he treated so many different conditions just by improving people's hydration.
Tell us a little bit about the book, Quench. Where can people get it?
Oh, yes. Well, it's on Amazon. It's at any local bookstore. We'd be thrilled to have you. We wrote it because we are very concerned about not just making people drink more while at the same time recognizing how important hydration is. So we put 50 recipes in there of the highest hydrating foods we could come up with, and we love sharing those. We just love sharing those, George, because they're gentle, they're nutritious, they're lovely to eat, and they really improve people's mood and their brightness and their alertness, their very ability to receive more life, if I can just be bold.
Now, I prefer water at room temperature as opposed to chilled in the refrigerator. What do you think?
That's a good thing. In fact, the Chinese have a tradition going back thousands of years of only drinking room or warmed water. And the reason is your body then doesn't have to do the work of warming its liquid back up to the temperature of its stasis, homeostasis, 98.6. So you get your body doing less work to get that water into your cells and tissues than if your body had to warm up iced water, which, of course, is crazy. That's what we offer the elder in the nursing homes. They're given ice water. What old person do you know wants ice water? So, of course, they're not drinking. Crazy.
So when you begin to hydrate, mm-hmm. how soon does it take before you see some results with your body? Almost instantly? That fast?
Well, it can be even quicker than 10 minutes.
You start just feeling better?
You would notice that you have more alertness, that you have more energy. Because water is not just to keep us moist. And here's really a helpful list of functions so that you can see, wow, water's just, it's really important. It isn't just keeping me moist or my organs moist. It's actually the fuel that the entire body runs on. So we all know water conducts electricity, right? But it's happening in a very subtle way in our body at different voltages so that to have enough hydration means your electrical system is really functioning, and it's your electrical charge is happening in your body. That's fuel. That's our fuel. It's not only our fuel, it not only moistens us, but it's responsible for cleansing us and decontaminating us. So it moves out all the waste in our system and also the multiple contaminants that we're exposed to today. So that hydration becomes really important in the kind of environments we're living in now, which are highly contaminated, whether it's chemicals from farming, whether it's antibiotics from the medical communities, or whether it's something like electromagnetic contaminants. We're really in very contaminated environments, and water's our friend here. And then the final thing that water does, that's really where the new research is so interesting, is that water is what allows cell-to-cell communication to happen efficiently in our bodies.
All right, well, stay with us, Gina. We're going to take a quick break at the top of the hour here. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you next. Questions for Gina Bria about her book, Quench, or perhaps you have a story where you were out in the desert or someplace you were dehydrated. I want to see how you pulled through. And I've got a few more questions next, too.